Everybody wake up.
Time to wake up. Time to start the day. Wake up late with Dougie. He is the only
wake
way.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late. Everybody.
Wake up late.
Wake up.
It's late. Time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie.
It's time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. What rhymes with Dougie? He's just so funny.
It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Live from Danger Studios. Chorus praise and now you know.
We're the hottest show in this place.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
I said 1, 2, 3. Everybody wake up.
Live from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida. It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Starring Dougie Almeida. Now. Let's start the show.
Good morning. Welcome to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Special show today. I'm here in the studio with a good friend, comedian, and I consider mentor, Mr. Steve Marshall.
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, man?
Good morning.
Welcome back to Florida. You know what I mean? You should just like have your own train.
I love it down here.
Right. You should have just like a... You, at this point, the people on the flights must go, hey, you're back. Now, well, by the way, you come, I mean, literally, how many times back and forth to Florida?
I don't know. It could be 6-7 times a year.
That's
easily.
Nice.
And it started a long time ago when I used to work the comic strip. I used to do, when I was started as an MC at the comic strip in Fort Lauderdale, I was here 20 weeks
right.
a year. 20 weeks a year. And a lot of people came out of Florida. Brian Regan and
right.
Dennis Regan and... Florida was a place, Mike Lawrence now, and a lot of people, Florida was a place where, especially for New Yorkers, we would see if our humor translated down here because, you know, the big complaint was comedians would come from New York City and talk about the subway.
Right.
And half the audience would know what it was because they're New Yorkers and the other half, they didn't give a crap, you know?
Right.
So Florida was very important for us to see if our acts translated beyond New York City.
Yeah, so that's that would be a normal challenge for a New York comedian that, you know, I was working with Carmen Lynch at Comedy Zone Jacksonville this mm-hmm. weekend. She's, you know, she started in New York. She said she was an actress that happened to be in New York and then started doing comedy there. So for her, where a lot of people end up working from all different parts of the country, then going to New York, you know, and trying to see if you fit in New York, you know what I mean?
Right.
She actually was all the way around. So it doesn't matter. I mean, I think the diversity of audiences is a big part. You know, when you're on the road, that's the, you know, to find out what the Midwest crowd's like, the Southeast, the Southwest, you know what I mean?
A lot of comedians, and you know, you and I talk about this, the always aggression in comedy. I feel there's a lot of aggression and anger in comedy right now. And, you know, in New York City, the New York City club comedians put down what they call the road comedians. Then the road comedians put down the New York City comedians. But I always have one thing that always answers that. One night I was at Catch a Rising Star, and Rodney Dangerfield went on, and he looked at the audience and he said, hey, if your act works here, you ain't got no act. Meaning, if you can make a bunch of uppity New Yorkers laugh, all right, you don't have an act, all right? Because it's the United States of America.
Right.
Rodney used to say, I want to make every joke a killer wanted in 50 states. So just because your act works in New York City, and I'm a New Yorker, a real New Yorker saying that. One night I was at one of the hip alternative places, and I was left at the bar with somebody while the comedian went to go on stage. And of course, the story of my life is nobody told me. I did a one-man show for 2.5 years. Nobody told me. Nobody told me the person they left me with was a William Morris comedy agent. And I have a tendency to put my foot in my mouth, and they were going... Now, where do you work, Steve? Where do you work, Steve? And I guess I was like, I don't know. I work at New York Comedy Club in those days, you know,
right.
Maybe not as hip a club and, you know, go down the road to Florida and goes, those clubs don't count. It's the NYU students don't go to those clubs.
Yeah.
Since when do the NYU students determine what's funny in America? So I think coming down to Florida for me was an opportunity to learn to be funny. And I think the most important thing is to just get a home, go someplace. It's hard to develop an act bouncing around from club to club.
Right.
And I think it made me very strong, a very strong comedian And I keep coming back to Florida for that reason. I think it makes me a very strong comedian. I was just in Reno at the Laugh Factory.
Nice gig.
And almost, great gig, great people. And the humor that I developed in Florida.
Right. Goes over well there.
Goes over well there. Yes, yeah. It does.
I've experienced that being in Laughlin and Vegas. You know, a lot of my act, again, when you do the first time you're really doing shows at last beginning of the year, I did that run through, did Vegas for a week at the
right.
at the Stratosphere at LA Comedy Club, and then before that, Laughlin, these casinos,
right?
And you know, you're like, hey, yeah, I'm a guy from Florida. I've done New York. At least I've done Chicago, the Midwest. You know, I've got some testing material. I'm feeling more confident, but you know, nothing embarrassing. I was at a comedy festival one time, and somebody did a joke about Hialeah, Florida, Hialeah, Miami. You know, and I'm like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? That's, you know, that's not gonna.
Unless you could use Hialeah to define you, or the other thing too is explaining. You know, this is going to be a great. You know, this is the way Dougie and I, those listening, Dougie and I are all over the place, but we're really not all over the place.
Right,
I just feel so relaxed with you that I can say anything. It's more free associative. You can talk about Hialeah not being in Hialeah if you explain to people why you're talking about Hialeah.
Right.
Because there was a gentleman, Teddy Bergeron, and he had done The Tonight Show several times. He's from Boston.
Didn't he? Is that Ted Bergeron, who was a host for the Hollywood Squares or something?
No. That's not another Bergeron.
Oh, Bergeron. The guy was a host of Dancing with the Stars. What's his name?
Right. He was a stand-up comedian, I believe,
right,
also.
I think so, yeah. I remember.
So remind me, because I want to talk about Match Game and Alec Baldwin also.
Yeah, that is a good topic.
I want to get into that, so let me forget that. Right. So a lot of things that I learned empirically. I learned them by doing, and I didn't learn them at a comedy class, and I didn't learn them from a book of rules. And Dougie, I was talking about that to you today about, you know, we're martial artists, guys are kicking the hell out of the bag.
Right.
And then when they get in the ring, they don't realize, I'm not a bag, I'm not going to stand still. So Teddy taught me some things. We were in a car, and Teddy said to me, the total opposite of what most comedy coaches would say, and I've coached a lot of people, and I'm into more words. And Teddy said to me, well, if they don't understand the joke, explain it more.
Right.
Which meant more words. And that's all it really is. And this is a guy who did The Tonight Show. And his first time on The Tonight Show, he got unexpectedly asked to sit down with Johnny. And Liberace was there.
Oh, my God.
Interesting side note. Again, free associating.
Hey, I thought you were pretty funny.
My Liberace impression.
Hey, that's marvelous.
Boy, that was a rough movie to watch. Talk about free associating Michael Douglas. And who played the other guy? Was that Philip? Who was the other guy?
It wasn't Philip. Yeah.
Was it Philip Seymour Hoffman? Or who was the other guy in the hot tub? That was a very.
Wasn't that Matt Damon?
Matt Damon. That's right. Yeah. It was Matt Damon in the hot tub.
1 minute you're filming, Jason Bourne
right.
movies, action. Next thing you know, you're making out with Mike Douglas.
I mean, I don't even know why more. I mean, like, are we so. Hey. I have to say it. I love gay people, but that movie was just weird. I mean, you know what I mean?
I have not seen it yet. I didn't think I would, you know, enjoy it.
It wasn't. You know what? That's the good point. It could have been so funny and so enjoyable. Here's another thing. Like, movies should sort of have some sort of point or thrust to them.
Yeah, why are you talking about gay movies?
You know, I knew you were going to do
actor,
that.
Actor like, oh, some news have a certain thrust.
Yeah, it should add a thrust to it, but
it's gotta
that
pack
movie,
certain load. It's got to have a certain, you know.
That movie was just, all you could think about was Matt Damon and Michael Douglas in the hot tub. I mean, it was the weirdest. It wasn't even good acting. It was just like, oh my God, these guys are in a hot tub.
You think they went out after and every once in a while, like still enroll and hey, you know what? Let's go hang out. You know,
I just didn't know what the movie was about. I didn't learn anything about Liberace. I couldn't stop. You know what I don't like? I don't like when you're watching a movie and you're going, boy, that Robert De Niro is a good actor. You should forget it's Robert De Niro.
Right.
I couldn't stop saying to myself, it's Matt Damon and Michael Douglas in a hot tub making eyes at each other. Boy, that was a real tangent we just went on.
Yeah, you know. I haven't bothered seeing the movie.
What was the thing you're supposed to remind me about? Match Game with Alec Baldwin. Because in the old days, they took the stand-up comedians.
Right.
And like, it's really weird to see, like, this does tie in. So stand-up comedians are the most opinionated people in the world. And they have opinions about, you're a road comedian, you're a city comedian, your material is hack, your material is derivative. And the next thing you know, is you see Drew Carey hosting, what's the name? The Price is Right.
Right.
Well, isn't that a corny thing to do? And then you see the other guy who does Family Feud. Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey.
So in other words, they're all talking about how hip their material is, but the second they get to host a game show, yeah, that's okay. I'll do that.
Are you saying that they're sellouts?
Of course they are.
Well, listen, as somewhat of a comedian myself, and when I put against those guys and everybody you mentioned, you know, I would love to be a game show host. I've acted it out. I don't know. I can honestly say I probably acted out being a rock star as a young man with a guitar in my hand.
Right.
But the second was me acting like I'm on a game show. You know, I'm actually hosting it. You know, one of my bits when I close is I do my Family Feud bit.
Right.
Where I get people on stage, to, you know, a man and a woman, young person, old, whatever, and they compete. You know, it's going to be the old folks against the young people, you know what I mean? And put your hands on your side, and the first one to hit the stool, you'll get a chance at the question. Name something you find in your husband's pocket, you know, and then fucking
lint. I don't know, I went for
condom, it. You know, everybody, and then who was better? Yay, go sit down. Yeah. You know, you're going to pass or, you know, you're going to play or pass.
And those shows are great.
Yeah. I love Steve Harvey on that show, because nobody really filled the void after Richard Dawson started that show.
Right.
You know, kissing everybody. That was the great thing. He kissed everybody in the lips.
He
didn't kiss the dudes, but he kissed the chicks. You know,
he was on Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah.
And then it gets better. Let's keep free associating. Who's the guy that went on after him? Ray something. Ray Combs. Ray Combs. And Ray Combs hung himself, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because he was an odd dude, right? He looked like a guy who was like a short weatherman.
He did.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's the kind of guy that runs a Tom McCann store. You know
that
what I mean?
That is so accurate.
You know what I'm saying?
Do people know what Tom McCann is?
I don't know.
Around? It was like a really cheap shoe shop.
Yeah.
It's right. He had the over manicured hair. You know what I mean? He's a little. He's a little. He's not quite 5'9". I should talk.
He was like the child if Chris Farley and David Spade had a kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? Like if it's like the small weaseliness of Spade. You know, but the attitude of Farley.
Yeah, so he hung himself.
Yeah, so he didn't, you know.
Does it end up bad for, like, all comedians also? Because, like, you know, I watch a lot of black TV. You know, I was watching Soul Stories.
What do you mean, you don't turn the TV on? You leave it black, you don't turn it on?
I like a lot of black entertainment, you know, I enjoy it. The black biographies, it's called Unsung Hollywood or something, because they don't want to call it stories about black people. So they call it Unsung Hollywood or something. And Red Fox ended up like in tremendous tax problems. I believe Flip Wilson just died very, very unhappy. Ray Combs hung himself. Robin Williams, terrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Same situation. I mean, is this what
Richard Jenny shoots himself?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Robin Williams hangs himself.
Yeah. I mean, maybe a part of me is, people say I have a fear of success. Maybe I just have a fear of dying because I'm successful.
Yeah.
Maybe but I just
actually,
purposely.
It's actually a fear of success. You know, I'll say this. Like, here's my theory on it, or my thesis, whatever it be. I think that sometimes as comedians, we get to stretch the boundaries of enjoyment and pleasure from the excitement it takes when the high you have as a comedian. You're watching hundreds, if not hopefully thousands of people laugh, right? Or get, you know, be able to change somebody's moment. Because to me, the power of being a comedian is taking somebody from a moment of just standstill to making them laugh and putting them into what I call the orgasmic happy world, right? Like, think if a bust out gut laugh, it's almost like an orgasm without the mess, right? You think about it, it's your body just releasing, like, your mind's taking over your body and it's just laughing hysterically.
A really good laugh.
Right.
A really good
like
drop
I think
on the
about,
floor.
I think about as I've seen people that made me laugh. You know, Peter Sellers, the Stooges, right? You know, you watch Jerry Lewis movies, Benny Hill, and then you get older. You know, you're just watching Carlin and, you know, everybody that made you laugh, that just put you in that place. When you're the one dishing it out, I mean, for me at least, that's like the high. So it's almost like a drug. So the only thing that's going to sometimes, what happens? Well, you get so excited, you're dealing with this, this is awesome, and then what are you going to go? You know, what's next? You know, it's all, like, I'll make another, like, let's say you're, let's both of us imagine we're really, really hot dudes, right? And we can just get, well, yeah, maybe true of you. I'm saying I'm married.
No. I can't stop thinking of Michael Douglas. And Matt Damon. Yeah. We were a couple of hot dudes like that.
Yeah, we're hanging out.
And
in
instead
the hot
of
tub.
Instead of a hot tub, we're at a podcast.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
But you know what I mean. So and then you're having everything you want.
Right.
You know, makes you're a single dude. You're nailing 1, 2, 3 girls. You're
right.
Beautiful women, models, this and that.
Right.
You know, and you're like. You know, and after a few years, you're like, what do you, you know, where do you go from here? Like, something will happen. There's like, it's almost like the Pandora box, like theory. Like, if you open the idea of Pandora's box, you basically delve into the pleasures of the world, and you take it in. But the payoff, like any action has a reaction. You know, is that and then from there you fall. Where do you go from there? Once you feel euphoria, you know, what's next? You know, what level does that reach? So we're talking about why a comedian
or
why do people commit suicide is because it tampers with the volume of understanding and what's to be expected, you know, in my life. If I'm always going to be happy, if I haven't had these incredible experiences in my life, you know what I mean? And being able to do this as and having that hype and that fame, you know, even anybody who deals with fame, you know what I mean? I think athletes have an advantage because now you're in a structured situation. If you're a professional athlete, you have a structured situation. You got to be at practice. You got to go. You have a season. You have a regiment. You know, you can't get out of shape. You have a certain level of.
And you also know there's a timeline. You know, at some point, you're not going to be doing this at 50
exactly.
years old.
You're giving yourself 5 to 10 years, let's say 15 if you're real. You know, but as a comic, you're thinking, I'm going to do it till I die. You know what I mean? Well, you know, yeah, you're probably right. Right? I mean. That's the way it goes. You're like, I think that way. You know, some other things we're going to talk about today is all about corporate comedy. I want to share some things with you I have on my agenda.
Okay, good.
Things I have planned for 2017, you know, and everything going on. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today. And also, by the way, as a little break, Talia Brahms will be joining us at some point today. I got to remember to text her, by the way, and let her know to just come on in.
Right.
You know?
I have a corporate gig, coming up, and I know all these topics I think about. I think about, I don't know, man. I worry about, it's such a society. I hate that, such a trite way to put it, so I apologize, but it's such, just to make it quickly, make it quick, it's such a society that has put so much emphasis on success. You know, with 10 years ago or 15 years ago, the Tony Robbins books and the Waking the Giant Within and Think and Grow Rich and 15 years ago, self-help. And, you know, I just remember my dad, and I can't picture my dad reading a self-help book. You know, I can't picture my dad ever sitting around thinking that there was something wrong with him. I think he just knew he was frustrated and upset.
Right.
But it's not just like make yourself a better you. It's like, there's so much pressure to be successful. It's become not pressure only. It's become a society of success.
Right.
Your looks have to be successful. Everything about you. I mean, we were talking about the what do you call them when the comedians roast battles and stuff that.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, heaven forbid your hair doesn't look. You know, I'm obviously picking on things that I would roast I want to get them out of the way before I enter a roast battle.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say you and I are about to enter a roast.
Right.
Right. And maybe you and I will just play a little game right now. Okay.
Oh, this is going to be horrible, folks. This is my worst nightmare.
All right. So, you know what I mean? So what we'll do is the idea of a roast is that, you know, you have to. And I watched one, but you mentioned Mike Lawrence, a Florida comic. I watched the roast that it was on, I guess that the, what's his name?
With Jeff Ross.
Comedy Central show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him against some other guy.
Right. I saw Mike Lawrence's. Yes.
Yeah. And it was great. You know, and they're brutal. I mean, you know, there's...
it's so brutal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, so you don't pull any punches, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's what has to happen in a roast, you know? And to me, a roast, and this may help you as a martial artist, a roast to me is almost like a sparring match. If you and I, to enter this, we had our pads on, we put all our gear on, okay, let's spar, you know, just basically what you do is you just start off to a certain pace.
This is hysterical already, because I already see the gleam in your eye. Right. So what do we start off slow with each other? Like, oh, that's a nice, let's just spar, let's roast, Dougie and I are introducing
a new. If you want to be a good roaster.
We got to spar.
It's almost like you spar. So
yeah,
you,
so we got to do a little
wanna,
sparring.
You don't want to come out and say, you know.
Go ahead, go for it, Dougie. You know, look at me, go for it.
Yeah, okay.
We're sparring, go.
By the way, where did you, where'd you get your clothes today? From the Village People collection? All right, you know, nice and simple.
I didn't know this was full contact. I thought we're sparring.
I mean, that's, you know what I'm saying? That's a simple.
Were you there that one night in the audience when somebody yelled out at me, where did you buy that shirt? Target? And I paused and said, as a matter of fact, yes, I did.
Yeah.
Target.
I still have the receipt.
Yeah. So a little light sparring. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, so you have to. And like I said, when I did this one against, we had this burnt toast challenge at the Funky Buddha.
Right.
You know, I had plenty. You know, I thought right away. But when you're asked to do it, I thought, this is great. You know, this is a challenge as a comic. I'm gonna write some jokes about somebody, which came pretty easy, it turned out. But I don't know. You know, what are you going to do?
No, but I have an opinion on this. My opinion on this is, you know, it's the comedians have this hostility towards one another and this over opinionated. I'm making up words tonight. They're just too opinionated. They're too opinionated.
You guys get a lot of that, it seems, in New York.
Oh, it's the worst.
That you got, you know, like.
It's the worst.
Again, I had Pete Lee on the show. You know, I think he's a very nice kid, funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he was in Brooklyn one time and someone called him a hack because he was doing an act out.
Right.
And, you know.
You know what? I didn't even know it was called an act out till about 2 years ago. I swear to you guys, I didn't even know what a callback was. Let's relate it to fighting.
For those who don't know, or our listeners who aren't comedians,
they don't know.
Yeah, an act out is like I do a lot of act out. Here's my wife saying something to me. You need to learn how to eat, you know, better, you know, whatever. You know, that's an act out. You're actually doing something.
Can we go back to sparring a second? Yeah. What are you, Margaret Cho?
All right, we're going to be...
Here we go. No, go for it. Right, go and get throwing right. it.
Yeah.
I know
yeah,
Dougie yeah. is so... I love you so much, but listen, you know, you and I...
Listen, Steve Marshall's so Jewish, he won't ever buy a shirt with sleeves. He thinks it's getting cheaper.
You know...
All right.
But here's the difference.
That's a counter. That was a nice counter. You came out, right? You stuck one. Okay. And then I went... And I hit you.
Oh, look. Because
and now we're dancing.
I like sparring with you because I know you're under control. And that's the whole thing. When I fought, like my teacher would always say to me when I fought, he goes, you fight me better than you fight them. And the reason is because I know my teacher, even though he can kill me, he's not going to kill me. And I know you and I as friends, believe me, you and I know our weak points. I know you know my weak points because I probably have more than you and you're going to be nice about it. Okay. I knew that wasn't going to really bother you. But what bothers me about going in the ring is you got to really fight in the ring. That's no joke.
Right.
Those guys, even though they, you know, Dougie, they always say it's not full contact, but it always ends up full contact.
Well, it's amazing. And by the way, joining us in the studio is Talia Brahms.
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Yeah, welcome. And we're talking about, you know, comics like
roast battles,
things like that.
Relating it to martial arts, sparring.
Yeah, sparring. You know, like we were going to work on it a little bit. And I said, you know, but like as a martial artist, when you spar... You know, you don't.
And maybe maybe that's it.
Sparring is when you put your pads on. You actually fight.
You're training. Go at it easy, but you're preparing to fight full content. Well,
you're like mock fighting.
Yeah, it's like you're fighting at 50%. You basically idea is you come out at 50%.
Maybe here's the problem with the roast battles for me. Growing up in Brooklyn, New York, and going to public school, I guess I don't want to spar. I'm going to go full contact. I'm going to really hurt you with the truth.
Well,
you
know? In sparring, there are people like that. I've gone to other schools as an athlete, as especially in Taekwondo, prepared for Olympic trials and shit. So you would go to a place and you set the sparts, you know, spar certain people to get a, you know, talk guys, whatever. What were you just talking about?
Yeah, no, because we're talking about how it escalates from sparring
to
full contact.
So every once in a while you get in the ring with somebody. You know, that doesn't has two speeds, you know, on and off.
Right.
And, you know, you get in there and you're like, you know, and next thing you know, the guy throws a kick like and you get under it a little bit like a spinning hook kick. You're like, dude, if that landed, I'd wake up next week. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes in comedy, it's that way, too.
So are you guys saying that the roast battles are like sparring and you would just want to go all out? Or?
No, I think to me, I make an analogy. Sometimes it's simpler. Sometimes if you have structure in your life and you say, okay, I'm going to get into something, I've never been in a roast. You know, I've never roasted another comic. So I'm going to enter it the same way I would enter a sparring match. like, okay, listen, this will be fun. We're going to be throwing stuff at
Dougie
each other.
And I thought we could just fool around. Like, during today's show.
Like one of my jokes, I said, you know, Steve's so Jewish, he always buys shirts with no sleeves because he thinks it's getting cheaper.
And my counter is, why do you have to keep repeating yourself? But you see, here's the thing.
I see what you're saying.
I really do love you. I mean, that's Michael Douglas.
Now we're back. He mentioned, by the way, you see the movie Liberace with Mike Douglas?
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't see it, but he can't
see
the
hot tub scenes. I can't get over Matt Damon and Michael Douglas in the hot tub.
That is.
I live in Greenwich Village. But going back to this is, you know, they always use this phrase for the roast. We only roast the ones we love. They couldn't be more full of shit. These comics, some of them hate each other so much, or maybe they don't hate each other. They just like getting angry about each other. We only roast the ones we love.
But let me ask. Right,
the perfect
ask.
Example is you and Kevin. I don't think there's anyone that you get along with less.
Right. Well, I don't.
Well,
I don't,
so you've mentioned.
At this
so
point,
mentioned.
We don't even. We don't.
And I also talk because we talk about how hip everybody tries to be. I wish everybody would give the roast credit. Those came out of the Friars Club, okay, where the roast started. And they were started by, may I say this in a cliche way, old Jewish borscht belt corny comics who probably these hip comedians would put down. So all you're doing is really stealing and hacking from the old borscht belt Jewish comedians.
I think in our comedy community, what it is, it's basically since
hacking is
since
that even
con- since well, if anything's hacky, basically it is a saying we're going to use something from the past, you know, or something from our history or comedy's history.
But they'd be the first probably to put those guys down.
I'm saying the hypocrisy in it. I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying that. But at least they're saying we're going to take an old traditional thing and use it for and let us do work with it now, like modernize it, whatever.
Here's
the thing. I'm not in either way of it. Like I think at this point, with this and everything that's happened in our local scene, if some people have shit to say, because my point is, let's say in sparring now, let's get back to the sparring, okay? Just like the physical sparring. Now we're in the ring. Okay.
Can I put my comedy helmet on?
Yeah. Okay.
I feel it coming.
No, you missed the joke. The joke's got to be, I got to put on my comedy cup. All right. Much funnier. All right, so I'm putting on my comedy cup, but here's the thing: in fighting, and people always ask me why was I undefeated, you know, in fighting.
Can I ask why were you undefeated?
Okay, well, you know, I'll
tell
people
you. Always ask you,
right?
We have the yell once in a while. People always ask you. Is that what people really always? No, why are you undefeated?
Okay. It's fine now.
You remind me. I hate to say this because the sparring is now. You're allowed to. You can hit me back after this.
But I'm going
after you now, Talia. Or you remind me.
I just got here.
The famous comedian Otto and George.
Yeah.
When the dummy would say, George would say to Otto, every time you speak, the show goes bad. That's like when you speak. Stop interrupting us.
Okay.
You owe me one.
I don't take too much offense to that one, but I thought it was going to be worse.
I wouldn't.
So in fighting, you know, it's not just how you punch. Like you were talking, you and I were talking in conversation. You see guys that are kicking the bag and they think they're badass.
Yeah.
But then the minute you throw a punch at them or kick them, you know, they look like a newborn calf.
Right.
You know, they haven't experienced that. You know, but like almost like in sparring. So if someone hits you with something that's really personal, like one of the Kevin Perry's jokes was that I couldn't be a father.
I heard your episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he basically came out because
I would call that below the belt.
Well, you know, listen, here's the thing about it.
It's not funny.
Here's the, well, you know, he knows not funny. So, but my point,
listen, oh my God, Dougie's sparring.
Come on, dude.
Dougie's taking on everyone at once.
Listen, in all due defense, I originally didn't want to do that because as I told Steve, it's almost like beating up a retard. You know what I mean? I you know, it was like the old joke going hacky. It's like having a battle of wits and you've come unarmed. You know, that you know, I can't what movie that was from. Sir, you've come to a battle of wits and you're severely unarmed, you know.
Why do you repeat everything? I'm sorry, I'm still in the sparring mode.
I'm going to edit it. That's the difference. Everybody's going to say, why does he keep saying that? I'm just to fuck with you, I'm going to edit that out.
That's another thing people ask Dougie all the time.
Yeah.
Listen, Dougie, just get it over with. Go for my hair, my age,
Jewish.
Listen, no, don't.
That's what a
knock
good roast does.
I'm going to tap.
I'm going to tap you for your rounds.
No,
my friend.
This is like public school where at 8:45 in the morning, some Italian kid would come up to me because I was Jewish and go, at 3 o'clock, I'm going to kick your ass, Jew. And then, like, you'd have to sit through every period, 9 a.m., 10 a.m., 11. That's all you could worry about. Get it over with. Knock me out now.
Hey, can we do that? Listen, I want to, we're going to do, like, here's, you talk about an idea. I want us to film like back in school days, but us today. Right? Like,
let's say, that'd
be
great.
Like, just say we take us today and we're like, you know, acting out, you know, a scene from Brooklyn.
Right.
You know, 1980, 1977.
Thank you 19... for being so kind, Dougie.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about my numbers, not yours, because otherwise I'd have to get to the BC numbers and it goes backwards. it goes over zero to the negative. But, you know, you and I act out like, you know, we're sitting there, you actually have a fucking bag of lunch in your hand.
Yeah.
And you're walking down the fucking street and I come walking up, hey, Jew.
Right.
And you're like, oh, what is it, Anthony? I'm like, hey, I need my fucking milk money.
Yeah.
You know? And I come up and slap
those
you in
kids
the face.
Were not you know, that's what bothers me about the roast battles is I think it just creates a climate of aggression and hostility rather than working on your act.
Yeah, it goes both ways here.
Stop
because,
interrupting me.
Oh,
you want to get in the roast?
Sparring.
You want to join the roast? You want to answer this? You want to throw stuff back and forth?
I would like to. Yeah.
All right, because if you throw stuff at us or him or you know or but you know, then it's tit for tat, right? You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm going to pretend like I'm Italian. If you come at me, my brother Dougie's going to pick on you.
My brother could beat your brother.
Those guys
ass.
Would always have nine brothers.
Yeah.
They knew that I only had a sister.
That's why I was really bad as a kid in New York. You had no
every Italian guy had nine brothers. My brother's gonna come. My brother, and they did show up.
Yeah,
I just have a bubby.
Yeah, my bubby's Italian. One for you. I feel like Don Rickles. One for the girl.
Exactly. But as I was saying, is you have to one of the best ways to win a fight is learn how to take a punch. And I mean, I can't tell you how many, whether it's street fights or regular fights, mostly a lot of street fights where that first blow that's made, patiently it's made, and you make the blow and you watch somebody just...
crunch like a can, you
yeah,
say?
Yeah, or just up. Completely, you know, it's almost like their mind hits the panic button. You know, like, this is fucked, we're fucked, you know, we're fucked.
Right.
And you know that, and then, you know, but just like in a roast. So if somebody, you know, one of the things deep inside, I said, you know what, I'm going to do this because I'm not a pussy, I want to hear what the fuck this guy's got to fucking say. You know what I mean? And let's hear it. Let's, you know, I don't care if I know how I feel about, you know what I mean? I can almost tell you what I know my problems are. You know, who are you going to know more about me? It's like when I talk to my urologist, I go, what do you think, doc? He's like, you tell me, you know your dick better than I do. You know what I mean?
That's what your doctor says.
That's what
to
my
you?
Urologist says to me after he asked me why I'm undefeated as a kickboxer.
Ding, ding, ding,
yeah,
ding, ding.
I got kicked in the balls. Yeah,
you
I
know
got,
my
I got
you
kicked
know,
in the balls. You got kicked in the balls? I get kicked in the balls a lot. There's a lot of days I don't wear a cup, and that might be one of the reasons I don't have kids.
You know, my urologist used to tell me Rodney Dangerfield jokes while he was checking me out down there. That I swear.
Yeah.
So my other doctor came up with this joke. Oh, so have you seen Dr. Dangerfield lately? He does Rodney Dangerfield jokes while he checks me out. What I think is I'm going to do this in exaggerated form. A true comedian would not do a comedy roast battle because a true comedian would go up there and roast himself and be self-deprecating. A true comedian would be like Rodney and go up there and go, I'm not going to make fun of you. I'm going to make fun of me. I'm just doing it in exaggeration.
Right.
And I have a problem with that because another thing, too, is when the Friars did used to do the roast, it was famous people roasting famous people. So now we have people, shouldn't you be working on getting famous so we can roast you instead of being a sort of semi-known person trying to act like a famous person?
Well, a comedian, New York comedian, Sam Morril.
My friend, and and he's a great basketball player.
Yeah, he's a very funny dude. And again, I thank him so much because we worked together at Belushi's in Fort Myers when it was open. And we had a good weekend. And,
is it Belushi's in Fort Myers?
Yeah, well, it closed. They're actually trying to find a new location. Recently got an email.
How could there be a Belushi's? Didn't Belushi pass away?
Well, it's not like he has to be there and open the door.
Then who opened it with his name?
Well, he sold it. Jim Belushi opened up Belushi's. Like, I think he owned the Corner Bar in Chicago, whatever it is.
Right.
You know, again, I don't know the details. Listen, who am I, a fucking CNBC reporter? All I know is that
it's there.
That location, because it was located in a tilted kilt. Like somebody, the restaurant,
right.
the restaurant completely went out. So there was no building at all. So now they're trying to find a location, which I'm actually working on looking at some things. So
by the way, I was at
some,
speaking of the tilted kilt, I was at the lopsided yarmulke the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, this is horrible.
I was on the broken cannoli.
Yeah.
So my point was you got to learn how to take a punch. And, you know, so sometimes that I think that's, you know, I think this society. I think our society should learn how to take a punch.
Yeah, definitely. You know what I mean? That's why I like the idea of having this 1970s or 1960s like school scene.
Okay, by the way, Todd, what did you do? Is come here from a Disney? No, fuck. I can't even get. I can't even think of something.
Oh, you God, can't see that's God, the that thing. Was horrible.
See, think about it. You got an attractive woman. You got to roast an attractive woman. So you know what? You know you're so ugly. You'd probably sleep with me.
Well, that would kind of be making fun of yourself. I think Steve would approve of that one.
Yeah. That's right? What I mean. I would just come right out immediately and just hit the ground and just like make fun of myself. I'd finish myself off.
Right.
Well, I don't get it. In other words,
Speaking of finish yourself, I know.
He was talking about thrusting earlier.
But also, I don't see.
I'm telling you, ever since he's watched this movie about Liberace, his verbiage, his, like, you know what I'm saying? It's just keep going.
They're very charged.
Yeah.
I don't see
no, he has to
how
really think.
Working on roast battles furthers your persona or your act. In other words, like, I just don't get what's going on. I mean,
question for you then: does it have to? In other words, as a roast, I look at a roast battle almost like me doing like an open mic or a 5-minute spot somewhere. You know, I'm thinking whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to see if I can just do it. You know what I mean? I just want to be able to do it. You know what I'm saying? I want to come up with something new. I'm just going to try something.
Why does the audience want to watch it?
Because people like drama. I feel like that's it. And it's different.
It is different. It's a different show. And yeah. I think sometimes if they don't go well, because sometimes not everybody's a good roaster, but who knows. They watch it. Most of the ones I've been to, it's like, you know what I mean? It's a little...
I think it's a great idea in theory, but I agree with what both of you guys are saying about how is that helping you at all?
I think there's such a lack of humanity in comedy right now that I think that's just... I would have said it was contributing to it, but I think it's more just evidence. It's evidence of the lack of humanity in comedy. I don't picture Richard Pryor saying, I'm going to be in a roast battle. I don't picture George Carlin saying, I'm going to be in a roast battle. I don't picture Steve Martin saying, I can't wait to be the wild and crazy guy in a roast battle. I certainly don't picture Rodney Dangerfield doing a roast battle and attacking other people, because these seem to be guys, comedy sort of came out of being attacked and then using your sense of humor to sort of bring a humanity to it.
Right.
I think if the people in the roast battles, if their humor had more humanity in it, I would enjoy the roast battles. Because I think when you used to watch the Friars roast or the Dean Martin roast, the people roasting each other were so successful, it almost made them more humble to take them down a peg. But to watch these middle of the road, not yet famous people just be pseudo mean to one another.
Right.
You know, I think it contributes to the lack of humanity in comedy. I just don't see.
All right, now here's my suggestion. Here's my suggestion on the optimism of society. Eventually, if it doesn't work, if it's not a show that becomes that, you know, continued, you know, like it doesn't have the support. Like after a while, it's like an open mic show. There's a lot of clubs here in South Florida. You know, as we talk to places about doing venues.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked to places about doing venues that no one's interested in an open mic. You know what I mean? Because an open mic, there's no control. People just go up there and say the dirtiest, the some of this,
right?
You know, the most unprofessional. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, it could be really shaky at times. So there's a lot of clubs that don't want to deal with that. You know what I mean? They're like, look, I want to have a show. I want to have a, you know, one, two, three, whatever.
Some credibility.
I want to have some sort of show that's working. So much like a roast. That, you know, eventually, like, it's going to continue, or it's I don't know if it's something that'll stand the test of time. I think, if anything, someone else is going to do other things, like shows I've done at on festivals where you know, a comedian will be on stage and a photo will show up on the board, and you got to do 30 seconds on it.
Yeah.
You know?
They have shows. There's a TV show right now that does that.
Yeah. And, you know what I mean? These are a little comedy when you... These are exercises, whether you're doing improv
I'm just
curious what it evolved out of. You know, I'm just curious why there's this aggression, why there's this picking on each other, why...
Well, let me ask you a question.
It goes back to basic psychology.
When you think about it, you had the Dean Martin roasts.
Right.
You know, you had the Dean Martin roast, which to me was some of the funniest shit you've ever seen.
Right.
You know, but what you saw there was, you know, you didn't hear Rodney Dangerfield or Bing Crosby, Bing, you know, not Bing Crosby,
Norm Crosby.
No, his no, the guy that was God,
Kathy Crosby,
the guy that was God, the comedian with the glass, George Burns. George Burns, right? Am I thinking about it right?
Close.
The guy with the cigar and the round glasses.
Bing Crosby is
he was
a
God
white
in
Christmas
the movie.
Singer.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't imagine him saying something to Dean Martin, you know, you licked more ass than, you know, whatever. You wouldn't hear those guys saying jokes like that and just stuff about their mother
well,
and their
I
father
think at the real,
or their father
think,
dying in
I think
a fire,
Dougie,
you know.
At the real Friars Roast, I had a copy of one, Johnny Carson roasting Flip Wilson. And at the You see, the Dean Martin roast was a TV version of the Friars roast, and it was funny. But the real Friars roast that used to prohibit women from coming were really, really dirty. Maybe not vicious, but really, really dirty.
Right.
But they were meant for the ears of the people that were invited that evening. And
right.
Again, I say there's a big difference between, you know, making fun of somebody who's super successful.
Right.
Like, in other words, it's something...
You're not really knocking them down 100%.
No, not really. It's like, if you can't take it a little, do you know what I mean?
You've already put yourself on this position where everyone's looking at you anyway, so...
And what you're saying, too, one thing if you and I have a conversation about me not having children, but we're not going to sit out there and yell it in an elevator with 10 people.
I guess I just
right. Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like in those roasts, these are people who all knew each other. They worked together. They're basically like the Friars Club is. It's a fraternity in a
sense.
Are
we comparing it to, let's say, like the Comedy Central roast or like local South Florida roast going on?
I love Steve, but I get what he's saying. That you know, it's a. But to me, it's like, well, then my first thing would say, well, then you obviously never do them. You know, there's no reason for you to do them.
And by the way, I'm not asking for anyone to agree with me. This is just my...
It's your expression. That's the way
it is. Emotional feelings about
it. Steve's not looking for, you know, people to follow.
Good point.
He's looking for sleeves, but he's not looking for...
right.
He's not looking for people
to... I think I would enjoy the roast battles of comedians if their acts were more had more humanity in them. Because then I think if I saw... It's kind of like the roasts were kind of funny to see somebody. It was kind of funny to see like Jack Benny get roasted or Jack Benny be a roaster because we sort of knew him as a kind, lovable uncle. And
right.
Then to see him sort of misbehaving was fun. But I think for me, it just underlines, oh, I knew these weren't nice guys.
Yeah.
And now this just proves it.
Right. Yeah. Hey, by the way, this is the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I'm here with Talia Brahms joining
Talia
us.
Talia Johns, good
Talia,
morning.
I was going to actually say Steve first because he was here first, but you know, you're our co-host. And our special guest, Steve Marshall, of course. By the way, Steve, on September 16th will be our first inaugural act, our first headliner for Deuce's Wild Comedy Show.
Ooh.
At the Seminole Casino in Coconut Creek, Florida at the Nectar Lounge. there is no cover. Just come and get a great seat. Because what we're going to do, it's Deuce's Wild Comedy Club. Two shows. One show, each, you know, three comics. Myself, Will Rock the House Lewis will be opening up. Very funny comic. And,
awesome.
Of course, Steve Marshall, right? So that's like that show right there is about an hour, if that. You know what I mean? And then you guys go play the slot machines for 30 minutes. Then the Deuce's Wild Comedy Show. We're back for the second show, The Dirty at 10:30. We're going to call it the later show, the next show.
Dirty
Did you call it the dirty
good.
At 10:30 is fantastic.
Yeah,
I like that.
Well,
a lot.
I don't want to take it because there's a great room in Vegas that does the dirty at 12:30 now at South Point Casino. If you ever
really?
Every Friday night at 12:30, if you're ever in Vegas, you want to see an array of great comics and it's free. You just go in this big showroom and it's the dirty at 12:30 at the South Point Casino out there.
Is that where you got the idea?
Well, I was on it, so it was like, this is awesome. Cause, and they had a group called the Dirty Birds,
right?
Which are people that are always there.
Mm-hmm.
So they always sit to the side, and you kind of get it's kind of like an Apollo type thing, whether you get a thumbs up or not.
Again, like see that. What's going on? We've turned comedy into a gladiator ring.
Yeah.
By the way, will I be the first Deuce Bag to perform?
That is awesome.
There you go.
I'll be the first Deuce Bag
Deuce
September
bag.
16th.
Well, if you walk out there without sleeves, you're in a casino.
Headlining Deuce
But yeah,
bag.
That's right. September 16th. No cover. Shows are going to be at, right now we're set at 8 and 10:30. kind of thing. And 8-9, yeah.
Can we say where the casino is? Because see, people
Coconut,
always...
Coconut Creek, Florida, right off Sample Road. And,
yeah, yeah.
State
how
Road
do you
7.
Get there?
Take,
yeah,
take make... Turnpike or 95 to Sample Road. Head west. You'll pass a big... JM Lexus on your left, and right there you'll see signs for Seminole Casino.
Wow.
95
you were
to Sample
armed
Road.
And ready for
you
that.
Will see a big sign that's towering over the city that planes have to fucking watch for.
Right. Am I going to have
at some point?
Will there be a douchebag poster of me?
Yes. And you know what? They're already going to handle all the marketing, so I'm excited that the casino is going to take all that and do that at the Nectar Lounge. It's going to be exciting. There's actually the stage, in front of the stage is the bar, and where the bartender is basically at your feet, almost your his head. And then you're talking over the bar and everybody's just sitting in the room. It's more of a musical venue. So there's a little disconnect, but in that sense, where the bar, so, you know, it's not like a huge... You know.
This is going to be like a roast. I could feel it already.
Hey, you know what? Here's what we're going to do.
I can't get away from this.
We're going to take a break. We're going to talk about a couple stupid stories. We're only going to do a little bit. Now on the new... By the way, there's no more network. We're not on the WEI network anymore.
Yep.
So we are like a pirate podcast. You know, we do whatever the fuck we want here. So we're not going to do an hour and a half. We could do an hour if we want. Okay?
We can do whatever we want.
That's
Don't
right.
behave.
That's right. It's up to us. But we're going to take a break, and we come back. We'll talk about some stories, and we'll close the show. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Dougie Almeida from the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. And when I'm in Colorado Springs, I stay at Hyatt House. Great hotel. Because when I'm in a hotel, I want it to be as close to home as possible. Big comfy bed. Big living room. Big kitchen. Even had wine glasses. Not to mention free breakfast in the morning, 9 till 9:30 on the weekdays, and 10 o'clock on the weekends. That's closer to when I get there. Great pool, workout facility, and locations. You can go to Seven Falls, you could go to the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, Pikes Peak. A lot of fun for the family if you're just hanging out on those days, you're not doing anything else. That's right, the Hyatt House in Colorado Springs, that's where I stay. When I'm in Colorado Springs, call 719-268-9990, 719-268-9990, and tell them you heard it on the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. They probably won't know what you're talking about, but let them know anyway. Hyatt House, Colorado Springs, Colorado. One of my homes away from home.
Hey, this is Lenny Travis from the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Listen every morning or Donald Trump will deport you. You homo.
And we're back to the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show.
Led Zeppelin here on the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. No, what is it today?
Today's Thursday.
Thursday, yeah. Jeez, I'm still back in time.
Just
Thursday.
You going to post a TBT of you playing soccer today, Dougie?
You know, I just had a lot. That's like anything back in my past. That's, you know, TBT, Throwback Thursday.
It's mainly just soccer.
That's all. And, you know, I had one of me when I haven't put the one of me playing T-ball.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm not. There's no T. I'm actually standing there with a bat in my hand.
Okay, that'll be new.
Yeah, so I'll put that one up.
That sounds good.
I put the one up when I was in the newspaper for doing the Shakespeare play in Miami.
I didn't see that one.
No, yeah.
Nope, it's just always you in mid block
yeah.
of the ball.
Oh, yeah, the action shots playing
goal.
Those I like.
Yeah, I haven't posted the one. There's a newspaper. I was player of the year, right, in Broward County, whatever. So they took a photo, and they're like, all right, let's get a photo of you, like, saving the ball. So my friend Pete Samara was there as an attorney now. So he's kicking the ball, you know, and the guy's taking shots as I'm saving the ball. And
right.
But like, we really want a big shot, like, you know what I mean? I'm like, well, hell. So I got my buddy, I got Pete to stand there by the side of the goal, and he threw the ball, like, in the upper corner. And I took a flying step, and I'm flying through the air.
So it's staged.
Yeah, so it's like, and I'm you know, looks like you hear it. It's one of those moments if it, when you really have a save like that in soccer and you're goalie and you're flying through the air, you hear cherubs. You know, you're like, oh, you know, and then you land. But the older I got, when I landed, it was like a refrigerator hitting the floor.
Is that the hardest? Is that one of the hardest things about being a goalie is hitting the ground with being so vulnerable?
Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, nowadays most of the professional goalies are 6'5", and they weigh like 180 pounds. You know what I mean? They're just tall, right. You know.
It's not much of an impact.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not going to have, you know, Danny DeVito.
I think if you weighed that much, though, because of gravity, you would land harder.
Yeah, listen, I've had back surgery because when I stopped playing college soccer, and I was actually on the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, I was like, trying out, and I was on the team in a sense. I had to get back surgery, and I was like, that's when I got the old herniated disc worked on of all that, you know, impact. But again, my build is not really, it's probably not appropriate. You know, if my father was smart, he would have taught me how to play third base in baseball. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'd be a really good third baseman. You know what I mean?
Well, how?
Or shortstop. Look at me. I'm a shortstop.
Or defense on soccer.
Here's your chance, buddy. You could have said catcher. See, that's why you're never going to, you could have been a catcher. See, that's why you can't do a roast. See, you're not a mean guy. I mean, like Peter Leonard, if he was sitting here, he would have said, yeah, you're probably the catcher, right? If Peter, like, he's a mean, totally. Like, you know Peter
no,
Leonard.
No, you know what? Yeah, I do know Peter. I'm skating over it.
he's like, don't remind me.
No, I'm not a mean guy. And you want to know something also? I just think, it's not like if you come to see my show, I don't have targets that I go after.
Right.
But I think the targets I go after merit, like in other words, I don't know, maybe like I don't want to hunt ants. You know right. what I mean? I want to hunt big game.
Mm-hmm.
This comedy stuff is ants. There's people right. step. They're just roast battles. Ants stepping on ants. Let's hunt some big game. You know, let's hunt some real issues like civil rights or you know what I mean. Or
we mentioned
hurting gay people.
We're mentioning comedian Sam Morello on the break. I shared you guys a story.
Right.
He basically gave me my big punchline on my joke, and I was thankful for it. But he was he's in one. He's going up against the guy that he's got a fucked up. I can't remember his name.
Oh, like the next Comedy Central one?
Yeah,
Steve Razzisi or something.
Razzisio. Now this is the guy who is the guy who supposedly kind of fibbed that he was in 9/11. Right? He
said that he was in one of the towers.
He was and then it turns out he was full of shit.
Steve Razzisi.
Yeah. So they're going at each other, and Sam posted on Facebook, you know, the battle's beginning because the guy, Sam put out a text or a fan, or whatever, tweet, whatever. He goes, I get this guy's like, he's hiring writers. You know, he's getting all these writers together to be against me on my roast. And that guy responded. He goes, dude, it's research. I don't know who the fuck you are. He goes, I thought you were the guy, the Uber driver who was going to pick me up for the gig.
Who said that?
I like that.
Steve, the guy said that's about, you know, Sam.
Wow.
And I think then Sam responded, I think, well, I'd rather be unfamous than infamous.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because of what he, you know.
So when they do the roast battles, do these guys write their own stuff or do they go around getting their friends to write?
Well, that's a good question.
Because like the comedy roast on TV, the public doesn't get it, but those people all have dozens of writers. It's not them.
Well, first of all, when I did
even the comedians too.
Yeah, I think they have writers.
Mm, well, listen, I think
they write some of their own stuff, but I think
there's a lot of comedians. Well, listen, I've had friends, but there's a lot of comedians that are headliners and that they take underlings. They take their opening acts and they say, look, you know, part of your job is working for me is you got to help. But, you know, anything, you got to help me, you got to give me stuff too. You got to help me build my act a little bit. Or,
really?
Yeah, I've had a couple people that said that. Like, you know, if you have a joke, let me know. You know, not that they're asking you to do. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's like
right.
You know, sometimes they'll sit and same thing. Like, let's build you as well. Like, in other words, it's not just hey, you're going to give me all the shit, but let's find you stuff too. Like,
I think it would be a better roast if it was spontaneous. All right, if you didn't know who you were going to be up against and you didn't know who you were going to show up against
that day. Then you couldn't prepare.
You couldn't prepare, and then we'd really see.
You brought up the good question about whether or not if you're in a roast, is it unethical if you actually have friends or other comedians, like, you know, suggest jokes or actually say, you know what, hey, I got one for you. Because when I did the one with Kevin, I had two or three comics calling me and said, dude, I got, you know, he like sent me a list. Like here's
a now, list of,
right,
jokes.
Exactly. Jokes like to use. I'm like, ah, you know, or, you know, this and that, you know, and but I mean, is that, you know, to me, I mean, if you were going to go on a roast, and you know, I would say, you know, dude, I would not. Would it be bad if you asked me, hey, you know, I'm writing a roast about, do you know anything about this person, or Or, you know what I mean? What do you
listen?
What's your
I could see asking you about the person, but I would write all my own material.
100%.
And I know that can't be what's going on. The other thing is, I remember many years ago we did something called Hecklers from Hell, and after we did our Gregory Lyons, because I always give credit the person who came up with it, Gregory Lyons did it, and after we did our regular comedy show, comics volunteered because a lot of them didn't want to do it, and you would have to go up there. And everybody in the audience, but mostly the comedians, would heckle you.
Right.
And they would just come at you. Because I remember, again, with the Jewish thing, one kid was so funny. He said to me, Marshall, why don't you bend over so we can plant a tree in your ass for Israel? And one kid, did so many Jewish jokes. They heckled me about being Jewish so badly. One guy at the – oh, it's Kevin Downey Jr., I think it was.
Yeah.
Kevin Downey Jr. just goes – this is when we were all just like starting out. He just goes, Marshall, you Jew, you. Like they had so gone through every Jew. But the point of it was to teach ourselves as comedians, like you said, to be able to handle getting heckled. There was a point to it. It wasn't really to humiliate each other. Do you know?
It was just
it
was pretty
a
funny too. It was really, really.
I would
funny.
Mind that. That like, listen, I mean, to me, that's almost what an open mic is. Like, I've been in open mics where, you know, it's all comics, and I thought to myself, well, I don't know if I want to do any of my. It's not important to do what I wanted to try to do because I'm not going to get. I'm not going to be able to read a reaction because some. You know. So.
Oh my God! I just thought what's going to be the worst part of these roast battles. The audience is going to be watching these roast battles on Comedy Central, and then they're going to think it's okay to heckle us. Then how come this is? I finally got my winning. Finally, Dougie, I got it.
I
so the comedians want to do. The comedians want to do roast battles, and they want to pick on each other and everything, and they want to look tough. See, the comedians, they don't go in the ring. They don't really spar. Not in the face. Okay, you know what I mean?
Right.
So they want to look tough, and they want to pick on everybody. But I know these comedians have given comedy club owners, when they get heckled, to throw the people out. So how come these tough comedians who are roast battling each other are giving the second somebody says anything, throw them out. Anybody in the audience, throw them out.
Right.
They're not the tough people they're pretending they're trying to be.
So what you're saying, maybe this is a way that the... the modern day comedian is because he doesn't.
He wants a fixed fight.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Save it for the hecklers. In the, I'm telling you what this show is going to do.
I think this show
is going to bring hecklers out like crazy in the audience. It's going to be like Gladiator. They're going to see these roast battles, and then they're going to come out and so you know I'm going to come out on stage, and they're going to be, hey, bend over so I can plant a tree in your ass, you Jew. And I mean, what are you doing? You're heckling me. Oh, we saw Jeff Ross's roast battles. You know what I mean? Hey, I found a yarmulke in your mother last night. What are you doing? I'm just trying to tell everybody to be nice and be kind. Yeah. Everybody, listen, I know you eat a lot of meat, but here's a load of dairy in your face. What are you doing? I'm just trying to tell everybody be nice to black people. We're going to get annihilated after this thing.
Yeah, well, listen, well, if it happens, be prepared.
There we go.
You know, it was funny, not too long ago, there was a young comic that was, we're talking about young comics, and we were driving. You know, there's
when
anger.
When were we talking? Now look how worked up I am for this. When were we talking about young comics?
When I picked you up, you're basically saying how a lot of them think
everybody's a young comic to me. I'm roasting myself now.
Well, newer comics, you know what I mean? Like they think they're ready for this and that, but then somebody has to deal with a heckler.
Abe Vigoda passed away. I lost one of my contemporaries.
Wow, I just kind of fizzled.
I can't stop now. I'm so worked up by the roast battle. So we're talking about, yes, young comedians. Oh, yeah, and they have 10 to 12 minutes of material.
Right, and it's you know, to deal with a heckler, you know, I mean, it's a delicate thing. It's almost like a surgery. You know, you have to be a certain way.
I don't believe in using, and that's a lot of times comedians
how do you deal with a heckler?
I kind of use Tai Chi or Aikido. I use their energy against them.
I thought you were going to say you grab them and flip them on the floor.
That's Dougie's approach.
You know what I mean? And hit them with your flute.
Wait a second. Hit them with my flute? Yeah, I don't even know what that means, but that's funny.
Was that supposed to be a Jewish
thing? I hit them with my flute? That's the lowest insult. You win. You won the roast battle. Steve Marshall hits them with his flute.
You're not paying it. It's like kung fu reference. He used to walk around with the flute. you know, it's a kung fu. Like,
oh,
you know.
Kung Fu, the TV show. I never would have gotten that.
Well, listen, that's why people who laugh don't know why they're laughing, but they figure there's a reason.
I think it's just funny that I'm such a pansy that I skip around town playing a flute. Steve Marshall hit them with his flute.
Not only that, but you're on stage with your flute. Yeah. You're in the middle of a set and you had to bring your flute.
3 years
with
ago, I was fighting full contact and I don't like the roast battles. You know, I figure, you know what? Let's have these comedians go in the ring and fight full contact. Let's do that. Let's just have them beat the shit out of each other.
Doug is like, me, sign me up.
By the way, my roast battle, the guy when I even said, he goes, I'm like, anytime, he basically said he was going to kick my ass. So I think he referenced him. So I, on the radio show here, I said, anytime, any place, you know, we'll get any gym right here. American Top Team. It's got a great facility here.
He said you already called to like. Yeah, no,
to rent the gym for an hour.
But you see where this is escalating to?
Yeah. No. But you don't listen. I'm just saying. It got to that point because if someone says to you, you know, in front of a bunch of people and basically broadcasts, you can kick your ass and you're a pussy and you wouldn't do shit about it. All right. Listen. I'm sure you got your beliefs, but here's your chance to do it in a controlled, civilized manner. Get in a ring. We're going to do 3 rounds. Right? Let's call it 2-minute rounds. And my bet on the table is I'll put up $1,000 against your 100 that you won't make it past the first 2 minutes.
This is how far he took this.
Thank you. I just thought we were going to get on stage, be a little vulnerable. Like, I love whenever you go to acting class or you go to comedy class, it's important to be vulnerable. One of the best ways to be vulnerable is by challenging your fellow comedian to a three-ring match or going in a comedy battle or a roast battle.
Yeah.
Here's how I handle hecklers. First of all, I listen to them.
I was wondering when you're going to give me.
I don't.
I
try and drag it out. I'm a Jewish.
You're not getting paid by the hour, by the way, on the podcast.
You know? Oh, my God, like, he scores again.
I'm very, 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 very happy to be here.
Hitting your word count on your essays.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, no, tell me how you handle it, because, listen, I admit that, if anything, that's something I, within my repertoire, that's something I need.
And I'm pretty fearless on stage.
Yeah, I need to be better at it. I think that's, if anything,
listen,
I want to work on.
The first thing to do is listen to what the person says. The next thing is your intention. I don't believe if your intention is to bury them, I don't, that's not my approach. My intention is to reverse them into liking me.
Mm-hmm.
So I first thing I do is I assume the sale. I assume that the person, even though he's heckling me, doesn't hate me. He's interrupting my act. Perhaps he needs attention. And that's very important because...
It's a good differentiation. What am I, fucking having a stroke?
Jesus, yeah.
It's a good way to differentiate
the two.
For those
of you watching today's sparring, I don't really have to say anything right now, do I?
Yeah. You're a fucking retard.
What was that Disney joke you tried to come out with? What, are you going to Disney or... That never mind.
A Mouseketeer. That was what I was thinking about.
I get it.
What are you auditioning for the Mouseketeers? Yeah. That was a simple. See, now it's
in between your stutters.
That's what happened.
It.
I just had a little stroke. Now I'm good. So
if you listen, they'll put it in your lap. I swear to you. I saw a movie a long time ago where Henry Fonda played a gunfighter,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling a young gunfighter. I'll be Henry Fonda in this. I'll be the older gunfighter.
All right, let's do it.
And Henry Fonda goes, if you just waited an extra second, son, and don't pull the trigger right away and take time to aim, you have more time than you realize. And that's what I think is what happens is don't knee-jerk with hecklers, because the first thing is the heckler is a bully. And the heckler, if the heckler yells something at you and you immediately knee-jerk, the heckler owns you. So I believe the first thing to do is not to respond, is not to knee-jerk and jump. Let him get it off. Don't respond. Now he can't counterpunch because you didn't throw a punch. If somebody goes, fuck you, and you go, yeah, fuck you, that's what they want from you.
Right.
So now somebody goes, fuck you, you don't say anything, or you just say calm. Now they can't counterpunch you, so you've de-escalated it.
Some of the advice I always say is like, if it happens, the first time it happens, like you just said, you don't just
let it go.
Let it go. You know, let's see if the person's going to continue going. It's like if if you're in poker, somebody places a bet, you know, you go along with it because you want to see the cards. You want to see what happens. Right. So you let it go. You don't pay attention to it.
Right.
Right.
Correct.
And then, you know, so then it continues.
Then the second time I let it go. Now, let me tell you why. Because the third time when I go after this person, if I choose to go after them, the audience is so on my side.
They're already
because
there.
The audience right. has seen this person try and disrupt the show once. I wasn't mean to him. Twice I wasn't mean to him. Now I almost have permission to bury him if I want to. But what I usually do is just try and be Steve Marshall. Like if you're Rodney Dangerfield, the correct way to handle a heckler is not to bury him. It's to go, you know what? Look, I'm still not getting respect.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Or if you're Steve Martin, you go, I thought I was the wild and crazy guy, not
right.
you.
Right.
So if you really have a persona, it'll come out of you what to say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like once somebody said something to me, it was really nasty about my mother, that my mother was out in the parking lot giving blowjobs. And
that's a very specific yeah. thing to heckle. Was that like a part
oh,
of the joke?
Oh, really, they were really, they were, no, they were a private joke. Oh. Yes. What?
No, I'm saying,
I was
going
to say, I'm really sorry to hear that about your mom.
So
no, that's terrible. That, you know,
So I said, I know she is. Why don't you go out there and get a blowjob so I can continue? So in other words, instead of disagreeing, I kind of use like Aikido or Tai Chi
yeah,
to
deflect,
agree
yeah,
little,
yeah.
right.
And neutralize. And also,
sort of like a yes and.
That's not my.
I have a nice one. I just thought of it because I put myself in your shoes. Like, yeah, your mom's out there blowing guys. I'm like, oh, did you already go?
Yeah,
is,
exactly.
Was it you ready your turn? Did you get yours? Did you get yours yet?
Or sometimes I'll just say if something like that. I think I might have said that night to stick around an hour because then she's going to be doing anal. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, tonight it's that? Okay.
Right.
Just an opportunity to fit in a joke impromptu.
Yeah. In other
like
words.
It's like it's not like throwing that. You. It's like, the bottom line is you're not getting thrown.
It doesn't throw me. It doesn't throw me. And just like. If we're talking here and it takes us 5 minutes to come back to something, because that's the way real conversation is. I once had somebody in Time Out New York wrote a review of my one-man show, Steve Marshall Meanders from One Topic to Another. And yeah, I do meander because that's the way real people speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Sometimes you don't want to polish. You ever hear this expression? Don't polish the apple too much. But I think the main thing with hecklers is to try and understand.
Is that a sexual reference? Is that a masturbation reference? Polishing the apple?
It doesn't stop.
I'm just, you know, it's
I guess you're catching on to all of them.
It's a polished apple.
Right.
An apple, it's kind of a stretch for that to be a masturbation.
Well, my mother
it would be stretched if it was an apple.
All right, be stretched back. If it was your apple, Talia. I couldn't stop. by the way, my mother
hey, by
is,
the way, that's a new name right there on the urban area, Appletalia.
Appletalia.
Yeah, Appletalia. It's a new name.
Hey, listen, I dropped my flute.
I dropped my flute in the shower.
I dropped my flute.
Yeah, I left it next to my harp. All right, so you're right. So you ignore it, and then you address it, and then you're like, you deflect it. And
yeah, and I never, do you want to know something? Going back to the, I can't help it. My father said even a train stop, but it doesn't stop. I mean, you want to pick on each other in these roast battles, but then you want to have hecklers thrown out the first thing they say. I've never had a heckler thrown out, ever.
Yeah.
I will handle it. And all the clubs know that. They go, it's Steve. He will handle it. He will handle it. Because I want to show the audience, hopefully, that I am naturally funny. That
right.
I don't need writers. And also, I started out getting my lunch money. I was like a Woody Allen. I got picked on as a kid. I was like a Rodney Dangerfield. I used my humor as my sword.
Sword. Now, you've never, you actually, like you said, you've never kicked, had somebody kicked out.
Never.
So then either it come to some sort of resolution or you or.
Sometimes a very lengthy resolution. One night when I was
again,
doing.
Again, with the, go ahead.
What? What did I do
lengthy,
again?
Lengthy, you know. Go ahead.
And allow me to explain.
Yeah. you know.
I used the N-word in my one-man show, Nobody Told Me, back in 1996 when I started doing ethnic jokes and personal stories about sex that a lot of people are doing now, but I got condemned for then. So one night I did the N-word, and it was in context of something I was talking about. I had a lot of black people in the audience, and of course it began. You're not allowed to use the N-word. So I didn't have the person thrown out. I just probably ended up talking about the N-word for another 10 minutes. And then the next thing you know, everybody loved me and they understood
right.
what I was saying. And we continued with the show.
Yeah.
I had a guy one night at Dangerfields. He's sitting up front and I was talking about black people. And there was a black gentleman sitting up front. And he said, you better stop. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, you better stop with those jokes about black people. I go, sir. First of all, the thing is, again, don't jump. I didn't heckle him. I didn't have a throw. I just,
right.
I went back to just being honest. I said, calm. Stay calm.
Right.
I said, be calm. Don't behave. I said, sir, I tell these
jokes. You didn't say, like, don't act like a monkey, sir. That would have been bad.
That would have been very,
that
very
yes,
bad.
That would have escalated.
I would have had to have picked up my flute and hurt him. So I just said, I go on this stage every night. I talk about this topic every night. I wouldn't be on this stage if I was saying negative things about people. And I said, but if you still have a problem with me at the end of the show, I will meet you outside.
Ooh, look at you, tough guy, yeah.
And then it just calmed down.
Yeah. Did he, or did he get bolstered up and all, you know,
after
up?
The show, I come out and Shario, the waiter there, goes, get downstairs, get downstairs. He goes, get downstairs. And I wasn't afraid because you know why? Even if this guy threatened me physically, I wasn't going to hit him. I was going to say, this is a comedy show.
Was it a big guy or a little guy?
Medium size.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was a medium sized guy. It doesn't matter. A guy who wants to hit you, you know that. Little guys can knock you out too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I wouldn't even let it escalate from there if it had come to. I said, listen, it's a comedy show. Do you really want to hit me?
Right.
The best way to get punched is when somebody threatens you to punch you is to then say, let's go. Where I don't back down, I stay there. And I say, listen, you want to talk it out? We'll talk it out. But this is ridiculous. Go ahead, punch me. Then take the first. Sometimes I put my hands behind my behind my back. I said, this is ridiculous what we're doing right now. This is a comedy show. So one of the things that we are doing with humor is talking out problems. I mean, that's what I mean. We shouldn't be escalating problems. We should be talking about. So Chario takes me downstairs. He's in such a panic. The next night, I get there, and Chario says to me, I get there, you know, my closings. He goes to me, he goes, you're lucky. These black guys came back for you tonight, but I took care of it. I told them you weren't appearing tonight. Okay, so
thank you.
A week later, I run into Tracy Morgan.
Really?
And I used to hang out with Tracy a lot. And he goes to me, hey, you know, we went to Dangerfields last week and the old guy told me you weren't there.
What's up with that?
And I said, Tracy, what are you talking about? What day did you go? He goes, I don't know, let me think, Wednesday? I go, I was there Wednesday. He goes, I showed up with two writers from my sitcom. He had a sitcom that I wanted them to see you.
Look at this.
He brought two writers to see me from his sitcom, and because they were black, they got thrown out.
Steve's not performing tonight.
The guy didn't even know it was Tracy Morgan.
How could he not? You're talking about the waiter, main waiter guy.
Yeah. Can I say this? Black sitcom writers matter.
Yes. Very much so. I'm going to share one of those moments that was an awkward moment. When I was in Jacksonville, there was like a merch table, which had like the board with the wall where you take photos of Jacksonville Comedy Zone, whatever. I had my bag of merch there, like a duffel, you know, like my backpack with all my T-shirts in it. And a nice young black lady was sitting there in the chair, kind of like in a nice chair, like, you know, little sofa
swivel
type chair.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like, so, you know, like a nice chair, like kind of next to the table. I had my bag behind the table, and a local comic that was there that was running the he goes, Doug, you're not going to leave your bag there, are you? I'm like, yeah, I'll be fine. And he's like, oh, no. And you got to grab it. So I'm like, all right. And the lady looks at me and I'm like, hi, you know, and I'm grabbing the bag and I felt bad. I'm like, I took the bag away, you know. But the only reason he told me to do that was because he didn't think there was a second show.
Oh, okay.
So on Friday night, he thought I was just leaving it there like when the show was over. I'm like, no, I'm leaving it there because there's going to be another show. I just have it behind the table kind of thing.
Right.
And I felt bad because the woman looked at me like as if I didn't trust her because she's black sitting next to my bag.
Right.
And you know what I mean? And I'm like,
that's awkward.
You know what I mean? I was like,
it's not you, I swear.
And really, because I had no idea why he was telling me that. And because he was loud. Everybody here was like, dude, don't leave it there. You know, don't leave your bag there. Grab it. And I'm thinking, you know, and then the lady's looking at me. So I'm like, what the fuck? You know,
I'd much rather a black person steal my bag because what are they going to do? They're going to take my wallet. All right. They're going to spend some of the cash. You know, a white person's going to take my checkbook and start writing illegal checks. You know what I mean?
Steal your identity.
So much safer.
Yeah. Exactly.
Such a bad
really,
joke.
Really fuck your day up.
Well, we talked about before, black people are not the problem.
And I want to clarify this again. I'm thinking about writing it into a joke. Think about this. And it's a real, people ask me, are you racist because of my feelings on the shootings and the police and everything that's going on. I said, look, and I thought about this, especially with John Levine. You know what I mean? I said, here's the thing. If I think about all the people I've known in my life, all my experiences, whatever they've been, I'm just going on everything I can remember. You know, let's just say there's white folks, right? There's Hispanics, Muslims, Jewish people, right? Let's hear it for the Jewish people, and black people, okay? And out of all those people, which of the people do you think scored the lowest on, like I wouldn't say confrontation, but just like there's always either been an issue, there's been tension, or didn't get along. You know what I mean? Whatever. There was
Let's say you walk in a room, out of which group of those ethnic people do you already assume you're going to have problems with? Which are going to be the least?
I wouldn't assume any problem. All I'm saying is I never assume anything based on any history. You know, it's like
you would not have survived Brooklyn Public School.
As a financial planner, to say, you know, past performance is no indication of future performance. So I feel the same way about people.
So this Italian kid is not going to take my lunch money again, even though he's done it for 9 straight weeks.
Well, listen, you never know. It's very existentialistic. You know,
Sartre, existentialist. All right. So
yeah, well, you know, man's existence precedes his essence.
This guy is so bright, it's ridiculous.
Well, not when I'm stumbling over fucking words on the
stumbling
show.
Is all right.
Are we looking at Dougie?
Yeah.
Remember the night we were talking about the theory of...
Hey, it's Rose time again, I forgot.
Yeah, ding. Remember David Letterman had that great line where sometimes something would be said as an acerbic remark or something, and David Letterman would just turn to the camera and go, "I didn't know this was a roast." That's got to be 4 years ago. My God. Now I forgot what I was saying.
Me
I'm an
too.
Old Jew.
What?
Does it really matter?
Where are we at? I think we were on something good there.
I don't know.
Oh, that's terrible. We can't end the show like that.
No. Call in somebody and tell us.
You were saying out of all of the people you've met throughout your lives.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. So, all right. So, and I put everybody together. And, you know, when I take bad experience, that means bad business dealings, been talked to a certain way or been treated a certain, you know what I mean?
Existentialism, that's what we were talking
right.
about.
We were
the Jew awoke.
Yeah, people will change. Can people ever change? Right. So if I look at that group, the largest group is white people. And I would basically say, you know, I've been disappointed in a certain, you know, again, not just, I don't know whether you like somebody's way of being, but I mean, like fucked or disappointed or blah, blah. You know, it's been about 35%. Let's call it 35% of the people were disappointing one way or the other. But that's a big amount of people because that's the biggest group, right?
35% of white people have disappointed you in some way.
Right, one way or the other.
Their behavior.
Or, you know,
was not positive? Is that
it didn't work out. It didn't work out. Like they cheated me, lied, stole, deceited, this was deceitful, or threatened. I mean, you know, whatever. Okay, yeah.
Well, those are Hispanic people. You're incorrect. I'm just kidding. I just said that to get a cheap laugh.
I haven't gotten to that number yet. While we're at it, I'll say Hispanic people, I would say it's better than that. It was about 25%.
You can't even group people.
Hold on a sec. I'm just telling you based on
data. Shut up. We totally can.
Steve, you sit back down in your seat.
Yeah,
you see
there you
how
go.
I'd see why I'd be no good at a roast battle? She's correct.
Calm down. Your arms are getting all red.
Someone pass me my flute. I need to hit both of you.
I'm Jewish. I'm overheated. Right.
Now, you know, and Jewish
nobody
folks...
Jews get overheated. And no Italian
as
guy
a joke,
got overheated.
As a joke, because he's Jewish, he said, you know, and I can only tell you this, but about 45 to 50% of my relations with Jewish folks have been somewhat disappointing in a sense, like something's gone wrong. Now, I don't know if that's because I got a lot of Jewish friends who are lawyers. You know what I mean? You know, I'm saying, but you know what I mean? It's just a number.
Again, not a lot
we're
of
both Jewish. Are
there's
we
not
disappointing?
A, you know, well, no, that's you guys are the other 50%.
Oh, there's not a lot of Jewish mediators. Yeah. You know immediately.
I said we're right. The other 50.
Yeah, okay. You know, congratulations. You're on that good side.
Jewish women always remember what you say. I was on stage, like we forgot where we were talking. I'm literally on stage the other day, and I couldn't remember what I was talking about. Imagine in front of a lot of people. I could not remember what, in front of a lot of,
yeah.
And instead of panic, I just, what was that? And finally, my girlfriend was in the audience, and I became like the typical Jewish boyfriend. I said, honey, what was I just talking about? Like, honey, where did I leave my phone? And she goes, oh, you were talking about this just like you just did, Talia.
Yeah.
It was so natural.
So, all right, back to the numbers. So, Hispanics, 20% to 15%.
The Jewish number was what?
I'm 45.
45% of Jews
really
disappointed
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it was. And again,
45.
Now, and you got to remember too. By
we
the
scored
way,
really high. On
by
that.
The way, by the way, but you got to remember, a lot of them were like old Jews that live in Hallandale and Aventura area that I deal with as a guy in the financial planning side. So. Yeah.
It's funny because the older Jews don't disappoint me. It's the younger Jews.
Yeah, well, when you're managing money, they'll bust your, you know, so that, again, in all due respect, that's, you know, can you see where the number's a bit skewed? But that's my experience. So, and then, of course, you know, when it comes to my African-American friends and people I've shown, they've got the greatest number. You know what I mean? For the most part, none of them, I didn't get fucked by a lot of them or they fucked me over or lied. You know what I mean? there.
Oh my God, I can't stop now. It's because they have no money. No. I'm so sorry.
I don't have any clients.
We should never have started off sparring at the beginning of this show.
And you know what I mean. But out of them, the jolliest, the most best spirit. So everybody asks me how I'm. You know, I wouldn't be based on my own experiences because in my own experiences, they as a group of folk, they're the highest ranking when it comes to pleasant experiences with. You understand?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
So you know what I mean. And then you know. And that's my point. So, you know, it's that now if somebody, you know, because of everything you're seeing on TV and everything happened, if you're getting a little upset when you see, unfortunately, a young black man shooting a police officer, well, that's kind of pissing me off, but it's not pissing me off towards a race. It's pissing me off to what's happening.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? That this is
nothing
happening.
Should be geared towards that,
yeah.
the race.
Yeah, just stop.
That's right.
You know what? Just you shouldn't be shooting a police officer. You know what I mean? And
right.
police officers should not be shooting anyone. Incorrectly, if that's the
yes.
correct terminology.
Yeah.
Believe
yeah.
me,
that's
sometimes
great...
I get afraid sometimes if I get stopped by a police officer, I get afraid. It could happen. Why couldn't it happen to me?
You always have to. That's why, you know, again, we always tell, like, you know, you always got to be real cooperative, or whatever. So there can't be an issue. You know, like, how do you know? Like, you know, how do you know? Like, and it's never supposed to happen. But like, you know, the guy just got divorced. He just found his wife banging his chief. You know, and then he pulls you over for a ticket. You know, he may have a bit of an attitude.
His wife's banging on his chief.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so stupid. I thought it was...
a lot of times
the
cops...
The chief of police.
Yeah, the chief of police. He just goes to work and he found his chief banging his wife in his office. And he's like, fuck, I'm going to go out and write a guy a ticket. You know, who knows? I mean, that could happen.
It's just scary to get pulled over because... Not even because of that, Dougie. Just because, you know... You're going to be on edge. It's so dangerous being
you still
a police
get,
officer.
Do you still get nervous yeah. when you get pulled over?
I get nervous when I drive next to a police officer,
really?
Let alone... Oh,
get
yeah.
a little panicky?
I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I can tell you I'm past that. Like, when I get pulled over now, well, of course, if I'm smoking, I'm a little concerned.
Well, I think that's where my fear stems from.
Right, because police officers don't want to get cancer from secondary smoke.
Talking about another type of smoke. But
I'm an idiot.
Yeah. what do you care if...
What do you do when you get pulled over? What's the first thing you do when you get pulled over?
All right, what is this? If I'm smoking in the car, or is it a circumstance like that?
Because if you're not smoking.
For potheads, they need to know. If you know that you feel like you were on your turnpike, you're on the road, and you see the guy pull out, the trooper pull out, because you were maybe doing 90 or something.
Have you gotten pulled over stoned
yeah,
before?
Yeah, there's a true story. Perry Sack and I coming back from the Immokalee Casinos Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago.
He mentions names.
We're going across the Alligator Alley at right. like 12:30 in the morning. And I'm doing like 95, 100. And I'm smoking, you know, it was in January.
Mm-hmm.
And just before we get over the alley, you can start seeing the toll, the toll area, the lights.
Right.
There's some trooper just sitting there pointing. And as I'm coming, he flips his lights. Whoop. And you see the blue come on. I'm like, oh, shit. So I'm like, I'm doing 90, so I'm this guy, by the time he catches up with me, and my car smells like, you know, a Jamaican fucking, you know, beach rental shop, you know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't get the reference either. But so
Jamaican
yeah,
beach
rental,
rental
shop. Well, those guys
you
like
know,
to smoke
the Jamaican
a lot of
beach
weed.
Rental
they do.
Shops
you want
everywhere.
This? You want the
when
jet ski?
When
you know. So yeah, so you know,
a very specific
right.
situation.
Yeah, so
well, pot is pretty free in Jamaica, right? Like,
well,
if you go down there,
that is like if you're in Mexico, you're in the Bahamas. Everybody wants it. You know, you want some smoke, man. Yeah, I walked into a place when I was in the Bahamas. I got rolling papers. The guy walks out, who runs the store, goes, "Hey, man, what do you need for that?" You know, I'm like, "I got it covered, brother." You know what I mean? I got it. Don't worry about it.
All right, so you're going 95 miles an
hour.
So,
and exactly, and I realized the guy's pulling me over. So the first thing I did, thank God, it was like 50 degrees out a couple years ago in January. So I roll all the windows down. I crank the air going, and I'm airing out the car with cold air. Just, right. I mean, sunroof's open. I'm not slowing down yet. I waited about maybe 25 seconds before I took my foot off the throttle. So I gave myself a little more time for him to catch up. And then I just let off and slowed down to 70.
What do you do with the joint or whatever you're smoking?
It's gone. It's basic, you know, it was probably a pipe and it was probably hiding somewhere in, you know, right next to my gun. No, so, yeah. And
next to the dead.
So, but, you
back.
Know, thank God I had the windows open and stuff. And, you know, it's nice and crisp out. So I'm like, oh, please don't smell. And Perry Sacks it, you know, he's got like beer bottles at his feet, you know, below his feet. You
that's
know.
How I would begin if you don't want a problem. You say, "Officer, isn't it crisp outside?"
Yeah,
no one's going to pick on a guy that says it's crisp outside.
I know, it's a good
well,
way.
This
guy's
not going to do anything. Good,
yeah. Big guy like this. Look at this guy, martial art. It's so crisp outside.
Keep going. Yeah.
And then the officer gets confused. Goes, "Yeah, it's so autumn-y."
Yeah. Anyway, to make a long story short,
did you see the foliage?
Yeah.
mean, that's ridiculous.
Stars are beautiful tonight.
Did you see that?
Did you see the Michael Douglas?
Did you happen to catch that Liberace
movie? Matt Damon.
Movie? Remember that hot tub scene?
Oh, just go.
Exactly. Don't you just like my impression of Liberace?
Remember they did that in a Bugs Bunny cartoon, didn't they? My brother's, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
So now the officer comes up.
So he comes up and license registration. You know, I clocked you at around 100 or whatever the fuck it was. And I said, I apologize. We're just.
Where are your hands? Where are your hands?
On the steering wheel, of course.
Both of them?
Yes.
Of course, right?
Right.
Both of them on the steering wheel in where you can see your hands.
10 and 2.
Okay.
And I rolled the window all the way. You know, well, they're already all down. So, you know, I'm like, I didn't want him to stick his head in the car.
What
so
if my
I
hands kinda... are below because I'm in a different time zone? I could mess up.
Exactly.
Oh, I better not go.
What are you doing down there? Oh, I'm on the
can
fucking.
I just go with upper left
I'm on the
and
Pacific
right.
time zone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, that's it. And he goes, okay, I clocked you that. I will apologize. You know, there's nobody on the road. I mean, just trying to get home, you know. He's like, all right, whatever. He wrote me a ticket, which was a lot of money, you know.
Right.
And that was it.
And what about does he go, oh, why are your windows open? Why is your sunroof open? Now we'll change it, and it's the winter.
Because it's crisp out, sir. I felt.
Just
you know,
get going. What is this, a roast battle with cops? Just go.
You and my buddy are going back after doing comedy and the beautiful stars, and it's crisp out.
Right, just go.
Did I mention it was crisp out?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I have to go home to check the salad in my crisper. Now.
But my point was now whenever I get, especially if I'm not, you know, which I'm not, obviously I'm not smoking a gun, all that. But, you know, if I get bowled over for some reason, I'm like, whatever. Because the worst to me it could be, it's going to be $100, whatever the fuck it is. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm like, because I used to be like, oh, fuck, you know, I don't want to get, what the fuck, a ticket. I used to get all aggravated about it. And I'm like,
this could have been worse.
Yeah, whatever. I'm getting pulled over. It's not like the principal's going to call my house. You know,
right.
Doug was bad today in school. I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean?
What if they smell pot? What if they come up now you haven't been speeding? I don't smoke.
I was just at a valet. I just had my car valeted at lunch or dinner. I don't know. I kind of smelled it too earlier when I got in the car.
That's a good one.
See, that's how you handle a heckler. You agree.
Ah.
You don't fight back.
You don't go, I don't smell weed.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you don't look
but
good.
But then again, I've done
you
so
put
much.
Your hand, then you want to put your hand in front of your mouth. I don't smell weed.
But
like
then again, I've
bag
done
a bag of Cheetos. Like, yeah. I don't know.
I've done so much coke, I really can't smell anything. So
I don't smell anything from all the coke I've been doing.
I don't smell.
And I banged. What's this thing? I banged my head looking for my heroin.
Officer,
needle.
You think I smoke weed when all this heroin around?
Cops pull me over, first thing I do is in my glove compartment, I put a yarmulke on, and I get as much Benadryl as possible, and I hold it in my hand like this.
I have like a black shirt, like a little thing, like I'm a priest.
Yeah.
Just put that thing. Hi,
excuse
officer.
Excuse me, officer. Do you have
Hello,
a Kleenex?
Son.
My nose is running its allergy season.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't bother you.
I got the allergies. Yeah. Any rate, hey, that's all we're gonna do today, guys. You know the beauty of having our own show, we're pirating now. We can, you know, we're done when we're done. We got things to do. Again, I want to thank Steve Marshall for joining us today here on the Wake Up.
I really had a great time. I hope everybody enjoyed.
And, of course, Talia Brahms for joining us today.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
That's right. And, guys, by the way, don't forget, this Friday night, I'm going to be at Backroom Comedy Club located in Tom's NFL in Miami. I'll be headlining the room along with Jill Chapone. Who the hell is out there? I don't remember. Just come
remember to tell them September 16th to come to Deuces Wild.
Deuces Wild Comedy Show starring Steve Marshall. Your feature performers will rock the House Lewis, and I'll be hosting. It's no cover at the Seminole Casino in Coconut Creek, Florida.
And can I plug my website? Go to stevemarshallcomedy.com or don'tbehave.com, stevemarshallcomedy.com.
There you go.
I had a great time. How am I going to begin to roast somebody when I just worry all the time? How was the show? Was the show all right today?
I loved it.
Yeah.
How about you, Dougie?
Yeah, good
stuff. Don't just say
you know,
it. Was it all right?
I got some editing to do, but other than that, I'm going to edit all the stuff where I said it twice. I'm definitely going to edit what I asked you if you're blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
How do people, because I like to see, could people like email you and say what you're going on Twitter?
We have our fan page at Wake Up Late with Dougie Show on Facebook. We also have Twitter at Wake Up Dougie.
Hold on. Wake Up Dougie. Wake Up Dougie. With people listening, please go to Twitter, Wake Up Dougie. I'm on the at Don't Behave. Just tell me what you thought of the show. I just worry about everything.
Catch Talia.
And Talia B. Comedy.
Talia B. Comedy.
Talia B. as in boy.
Talia and then B. B. E.
Okay.
Exactly.
You know. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Next week, all new shows that everybody's coming back. And don't forget, go to always the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show.podbean.com. That's where everything happens. Subscribe. You can also hear on Stitcher and on iTunes. Thanks for listening. Take care. We'll see you here next week at the same spot.
Frontiers, war without tears.